This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Dave Mistich. We'll learn about the name of the town of Odd, West Virginia, in Raleigh County.
When I look at somebody and say, hey, my name is Bubba. Oh, where are you from? Odd, West Virginia. You could imagine the type of looks I get.
The story behind the name of Odd, that and more on this West Virginia Morning. Matthew Thomas Reed grew up in the shadows of the Appalachian Mountains in North Carolina, where being queer wasn't exactly easy. But today, as a former public school teacher turned professor at Appalachian State University, he recognizes the importance of being a voice for the LGBTQ community in the region. In his contribution to the newly released anthology, Storytelling in Queer Appalachia, Imagining and Writing the Unspeakable Other, Thomas Reed reflects on his childhood and his family's stories of grappling with being queer. He spoke with 100 Days in Appalachia's Jesse Wright via a Zoom call about his writing, his childhood, and the impact that lifting up the voices of LGBTQ authors in rural spaces can have on the next generation.
Matthew Thomas Reed, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me. I want to talk a little bit about how you came to be represented in this collection.
You know, sometimes answers like this are really glamorous and interesting. This one is a little less interesting, as sometimes happens in the academic world. Someone says, oh, this sounds like something you'd be interested in. I hadn't at the time written anything with that sort of intersection of my Appalachian roots, and I kept gravitating to the phonetic pronunciation of queer in the sort of southern choir. And I kept gravitating to it because I remembered that being a word that was used in some really interesting, non-specifically queer ways, but also some specifically queer ways. I knew that I wanted to collaborate with some of my undergraduate students in the writing of the piece. We put together a little abstract and sent it out to the folks who were putting the collection together, and they were really intrigued by the idea of doing some collaborative work with some younger folks. That was something I think that really drew them to want to include it in the collection.
You touched on this dialect a little bit between queer and choir. Can you go into a little bit more depth about that distinction between queer and choir and what those two words represent in a place like Boone?
It's something I grew up with, and I knew it as kind of this humorous thing. I mean, as a child, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, older folks would look at me and say, boy, you're queer. And I got that my whole life. And I stood out in a lot of ways as a child. But that moniker, queer, it was always said with some kindness. It was odd. It was eccentric. It was different. It might be a little, there might be something going on there, but you were still family or you were still community.
When did you learn that distinction between queer and what it meant to be queer?
So it was an actual conversation with my father, and we were in the car, and my mother, who is from Burlington, North Carolina, which is, you know, she was a Flatlander, right? But we were having this conversation, and he would say choir, and she'd say, buddy, don't say that. My father's name was Buddy. And she said, buddy, don't say that. That's not a good word. And he said, now choir's just fine. It's just fine. But now he ain't queer. And the voice changed. You know, I was probably still pre-puberty at this point. I was maybe 10, 11, 12 years old. And I heard that edge in the voice change. And I also heard growing up, these same people who would appreciate the choir would make inappropriate gay jokes. These same folks would say, you know, I'd disown a family member if they were gay. And then, of course, there was the shadow of my Uncle Ricky, who I write about in the piece, who died in the mid-1990s, of circumstances that the family deemed as mysterious, that they didn't want to talk about the fact that he, in fact, died of AIDS. The hard-edged word queer, it didn't just mean something that was wrong or bad or against the Bible. It meant something that would kill you.
Your piece sort of sets up a dynamic where you've got Ricky, who essentially had to leave to express himself. You talk a little bit about his life in Charlotte, and then you've got your older uncle who fit more into this choir space and this tolerated space, and that those seem to be the two dynamics that you have if you're from a small town in rural South or rural Appalachia, that those are your two choices. Do you think that that dynamic still exists? And if not, you know, how do you think it's changed where we are today?
Well, I think we're disrupting it. And I'm very excited. And sometimes the disruptions aren't pleasant. There's still a great deal of homophobia. There's still epithets being shouted in hallways. But I think that there really has been some significant changes. I'm seeing GSAs popping up, gay straight alliances popping up in schools that I never would have dreamed. And, you know, I think this is largely due to some of the folks who are breaking and disrupting that tradition. They're coming back and they're still being who they are. And I really think that listening to the voices of, you know, the queer diaspora, I don't know if I'm using that right, but listening to the voices of queer folks who are living in rural areas, I mean, there is some real value, because a lot of us don't have the luxuries of sitting in bubbles and, you know, and just curating a set of friends that are always going to understand pronouns and they're never going to make inappropriate jokes. And that, you know, I've been very fortunate at the university. I have curated mostly that set of friends, but then back out in the hollers, I go, okay, I have to still be able to dialogue. I do have choices. I can just say F you and isolate myself, or I can try to make inroads into the community. And I think there's actually something pretty radical about that.
That was author Matthew Thomas Reed speaking with 100 Days in Appalachia's Jesse Wright about his contribution to the new book, Storytelling in Queer Appalachia, Imagining and Writing the Unspeakable Other. You can listen to an extended version of that interview at 100daysinappalachia.com. In this weekend's episode of Inside Appalachia, we hear another story in our ongoing segment called What's in a Name. It's where we explore how a river, mountain, road, or town got its name. Have you ever been curious for the story behind odd West Virginia? Our Southern Coalfields reporter Caitlin Tan has been digging into this to learn more about odd and where it got its name.
The unincorporated town of Odd sits at a bend in the road that is also named Odd. There's a church and a post office. It's divided by a winding stream called Tommy Creek. It's in Raleigh County, about 20 miles south of Beckley, and only about 250 people live there, according to the last census count in 2010. Bubba Hope grew up in Odd during the 80s and 90s.
When I look at somebody and say, hey, my name's Bubba. Oh, where are you from? Odd, West Virginia. You could imagine the type of looks I get. Honestly, it's a huge stigma.
But Hope doesn't play into Appalachian stereotypes.
I'm proud of being from Odd. Growing up in Odd, nobody ever thought you'd amount to much, you know?
These days, Hope lives in Parkersburg, and he's the regional coordinator for Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing. Some of his favorite memories of growing up in Odd include over-the-top Halloween decorations in his neighborhood and the snowstorm of 1996. That's when the railroad company his dad worked for helped dig the family out after they were stuck at home for 2 weeks. Hope loved how close people were while maintaining their independent streak, something he says still exists today.
You're remote just enough to get away from a lot of people, so when you want the solitude, you got it.
But time and time again, people wonder, how did the town of Odd get its name? On the West Virginia tourism page, it's featured as one of the most wild and wonderfully named towns. It's listed on Roadside America. Even the LA Times found the town noteworthy in their feature on West Virginia in 1985. Scott Worley, the historian for the Raleigh County Historical Society, says there's two documented theories on the name. They take place around 1900, and both involve the community gathering together to come up with a name to put on the post office, and also a mystery woman named Mrs. Brown. In one version, she proposed an idea, Worley says.
She said, well, you know, we want to stand out. We want our community to stand out amongst others. So let's come up with a name that's odd. And so someone said, well, that's a good idea. What name do you propose? And someone said, well, odd sounds like a good name.
And in the other version, she was reacting to the idea.
This Mrs. Brown said, well, that's odd. And somebody said, well, there you go. We'll just call it odd.
Over the years, the town drew residents for coal mining, railroad work, farming, and even jobs at the nearby ski hill. And as for Bubba Hope, well, he says no one living in Odd was too preoccupied with where the name came from. For Inside Appalachia, I'm Kaylin Tan.
What's in a Name is a recurring segment on Inside Appalachia. If you have a name that you're curious about, send us an email. It's insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. You can hear more stories from the Inside Appalachia team this Sunday morning at 7 or Sunday evening at 6, or download the Inside Appalachia podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our song of the week is a playful number from the John Pizzarelli Trio called Save the Bones for Henry Jones. The song appears on Pizzarelli's latest, For Centennial Reasons, 100-year salute to Nat King Cole.
We're gonna have a supper. We'll eat some food that's rare. And at the head of the table, we'll place Brother Henry's chair. Invite all the local big dogs. We'll laugh and talk and eat. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Today I'll go to market, buy up a lot of fish. That will sure thrill Brother Henry, for fish is his special dish. Get a large can of molasses, so we'll have something sweet to eat. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Now, Henry's not a drinker, he rarely takes a nip. He don't need a napkin, 'cause the things he eats don't drip. Blip, one day we had a banquet. It really was a bake. They started off with short ribs, then finished up with steak. But when the feast was over, Brother Henry just kept his seat. And we served the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. It was most proper, right down to demitasse. From soup to lox and bagels, and pheasant under glass. Class, we thought the chops were mellow. He said his chops were beat. Reet, we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. He's an egg man, Henry don't eat no meat. A vegetarian, Henry coming mother. Soup's on.
That was the John Pizzarelli Trio performing Save the Bones for Henry Jones live on Mountain Stage. To hear the full performance and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from CAMC and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Glynis Board, Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. I'm your host and producer this morning, Dave Mistich. Thanks for listening.